It is a busy Wednesday deadline day here for the MLB trade deadline. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for Brad Sesmatt on the Brad Sesmatt Show. On the other side of the glass, we have Devin Henry and Kennedy Wilkerson making sure that we are holding things down. All eyes on the MLB trade deadline. What will the Diamondbacks do? They're in that what some people are calling a no man's land of they're close enough they could be buyers, but all indications are they're going to be sellers. But it all depends on what's going to be coming their way in terms of prospects. So going to be keeping an eye on Twitter, have MLB Network on in studio, making sure that we hear any of the updates that may come through on what's been a relatively quiet trade deadline. A big trade came through last night, but other than that, there really hasn't been that much going on within the trade deadline, but plenty of targets within the Diamondbacks. You have Robbie Ray, Zach Greinke, I think has probably more of an outside shot to be traded. Andrew Chafin, David Peralta's name has been leaked out. There are really so many pitchers, so many position players within this team have been linked to potentially being in conversations, but it's kind of a holding pattern right now. Deadline is just under 3 hours away, so we'll see kind of what happens. But let's get to the latest. Our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. The news came down 31 minutes ago. This is from Joel Sherman, who does a great job for MLB Network. He said, as opposed to yesterday when it became more and more obvious as the day progressed that Bauer was going to be traded, not the same vibe with Ray. Diamondbacks will do if price met or reconsider in offseason. So there's been conflicting reports. There have been plenty of conversations about the Astros. Todd Walsh said that the Diamondbacks could essentially be chauffeuring him to the Yankees. They're playing at Yankee Stadium right now, and it could just be, yeah, we'll give you a ride up there as you get traded, similar to the Jake Diekman deal last year, where he was playing for the Rangers, got traded to the Diamondbacks while at Chase Field, and took the bullpen cart across the way to his new clubhouse and then pitched against his old team that night, because baseball is just weird like that. But it's an interesting position to be in for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I think what a lot of people are not considering right now is that the Diamondbacks do nothing. That Mike Hazen, kind of similar to what Joel Sherman said, if the price isn't there, he's not going to give guys away, because Robbie Ray still has a year of control after this season. Zach Greinke has a couple years of control. A lot of these pieces that are being linked to potentially being moved aren't necessarily arbitration eligible or could be moving on potentially soon. A lot of these guys are under contract for the next couple of years. So Mike Hazen has some leverage here where it's just, okay, we'll take our ball and go home. We don't need to trade Robbie Ray. We don't need to trade Zach Greinke. Do I think that this team is a playoff-bound team? No, not at all. I don't think that they are there. They could make a run and surprise some people, but I think if you've watched this team, you've seen they're a good team, but it's a very congested National League wild card right now. And as teams are continuing to make moves and add more pieces, that's going to congest it that much more, and clubs are going to start to separate themselves. But I don't necessarily have a problem with the Diamondbacks holding pat if they aren't getting what they want, because like I said, they have the leverage right now. And yes, it is kind of that in between where, Paul Goldschmidt was traded this offseason. Patrick Corbin moved on. AJ Pollock. It's they're looking for the guys that they can control for a long time. The Carson Kelly types, the Luke Weaver types. But with a lot of those players that are moving on, you still have that control. So that's why I think that it could be quiet. It could be potentially quiet. And based on what I've been seeing from those national insiders is that teams don't want to give up prospects and give up top flight prospects. We saw that again last night with the Trevor Bauer trade, but it's going to take a mid to top level prospect to get a guy like Robbie Ray, to get a guy, pair him with an Archie Bradley or an Andrew Chafin. A lot of these teams that are looking for starting pitching, also looking for relievers. They want to shorten the game in the postseason, especially when the rosters expand. So it could be a package deal, but that's going to be a big ask. So we will see, like I said, just under 3 hours from now. So let's get into, I alluded a couple times about the trade that did happen last night. So Trevor Bauer headed to the Cincinnati Reds. Before that, I saw Yasiel Puig was heading to the Indians. I was so excited for this Reds team because it would be Trevor Bauer, Yasiel Puig, Derek Dietrich. There is just so much personality in that room. And the two players, the two big players, I should say, you know, household names that are being moved in this deal, really left their teams on just very strange notes. Sunday, Trevor Bauer is getting taken out of the game, and he decides just to launch the ball into center field. And Terry Francona walks out, and it's clear as day on his lips. What the bleep are you thinking? So that was his last moment on the field as a Cleveland Indian. For Yasiel Puig, his last moment as a Cincinnati Red was being in the middle of a brawl between him and the Pittsburgh Pirates. And it was a very Yasiel game, not necessarily for the brawl, but if you saw in an at-bat earlier, we were looking at the video of this before the show. He was up to bat. Pitch was a bit outside. He was kind of starting to show the umpire up. And, you know, just kind of take his time and show his personality. And I may be in the minority. I think that these personalities, these quote unquote villains, whatever you want to call them, we'll call them the misunderstood guys, because I think that many people have misunderstood Trevor Bauer. Many people have misunderstood Yasiel Puig. I don't think that's bad for baseball. I think it's pretty great. But their last moments on their former teams are definitely memorable ones. But now, as we look from a Diamondbacks perspective, the San Diego Padres, a part of that deal, they send over a couple young, talented players, but they bring in Taylor Trammell from the Reds. And this is a guy, a top prospect in the Reds system. And as you look at what the Padres are building, you obviously have the Dodgers running away with the division right now. Rockies, I think more of the major league ready team. D-backs kind of still, whether it's a short rebuild, long rebuild, retooling, whatever you want to call it. I know especially people in the Diamondbacks front office don't want to call it a rebuild, but there's a transition happening. Then you have the Giants trying to figure out what they're doing. Padres, you know, have young talent in Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, Chris Paddock, you know, some young guys that have Chris Stratton who have made the major league roster, but they are stacked in the minor leagues. They have the number 3 overall player in Mackenzie Gore, who's a big lefty, has been compared stylistically. We won't call it talent level because I don't know if there's any ever going to be a guy like this again, but stylistically to a Randy Johnson. And they just have guys top to bottom in that top 100, and you add another one in Trammell, who's a kind of a speedster, a guy that could be major league ready soon. So that is kind of where, at least in the NL West side of things, that's where things are affected within this trade. So that's what's going to be interesting, just seeing moving forward just how many of these guys pan out at the major league level for the Padres, because if most of them do, all of a sudden the Padres, I think a couple years from now, are going to be a real contender. Fernando Tatis has been incredible this year, batting about .330. Had a hamstring injury a little bit earlier in the season, but he's back consistently doing highlight reel plays defensively, offensively. He's tagging up from second on a fly ball that barely leaves the infield, and he's scoring. He's just playing that kind of aggressive brand of baseball that I know that managers love. So we'll see kind of how this team progresses throughout the year. But again, for the Diamondbacks, kind of a holding pattern right now. I feel like this is kind of the most leverage Mike Hazen has had in these trade negotiations, because usually they're the buyer. when it was J.D. Martinez, and he beat the deadline by a couple weeks in his first year with the Diamondbacks. But, you know, he had to go out and get the mercenary, if you will. He had to go get the big bat, go get the arms, you know, make those moves, bring in those veteran outfielders. And he's done that with J.D. Martinez. He tried to really bolster the bullpen last year. It worked to varying degrees for some of those guys that they brought in, Jake Diekman, Matt Andrees, those types of players. But this is the first year where I think they're fielding more of the calls. And the calls are coming their direction. And it's now, okay, what's the most we can get for player X to help this team along in the future? Not, we need this immediate need filled right now. So that's where things are kind of different. And I think that's really one of the first times that with Zach Greinke, again, I think it's a very small chance he gets traded, but this is the year he's pitched most like a top five pitcher in the major leagues since joining the Diamondbacks. So if someone wants to go in for Greinke, all of a sudden Hazen has a little bit of leverage. Yes, that contract is still huge, and yes, it's still 2 years that they would have to pay. It's a little bit more of a pill that could be swallowed than previous years, but again, I still think they won't be potentially moving Zach Greinke. Yeah, I just don't see that happening, especially in the span of less than 3 hours. But again, pretty minor moves happening right now. Seen from John Morosi, the Tigers and Braves have talked about Shane Green, the starter turned reliever, help bolster the Braves bullpen. Braves have been linked to multiple Diamondback bullpen members, as well as Robbie Ray. So we'll see what happens. I think Jerod Dyson could be a guy that gets moved too. You have a guy that can be a defensive stopper and kind of speedster late in postseason games. Like, those guys are so invaluable. So I think he could be a guy that's on the move as well. So rest of the show, we're going to definitely be keeping an eye on what's going on with the MLB trade deadline, obviously, and also a lot of recruiting news. So next segment, we're going to be talking some of those updates. A big commitment from a Saguaro offensive tackle. At 10:35, you'll hear from him, Jalen Jeffers. He actually came in studio earlier this week to talk with me about that commitment, and a really interesting background, a rugby guy, a wrestling guy, and just a very physically imposing player on the field, and maybe the deepest voice that you will hear from a high schooler. So he's going to be, we'll play that interview at 10:35. But coming up next, we'll do some recruiting updates here on the Brad Sesmet Show. It is a busy Wednesday, trade deadline day here in MLB. Lots of commitments on the recruiting front. Cardinals in full force in their training camp endeavors, and we're going to get to some of those sound bites later in the show because there were some good ones regarding Cliff Kingsbury and his Madden rating, but not the Madden rating that you're thinking of. So on the recruiting front, it is a busy week for sure. Bijan Robinson will be making his commitment, number two player in the state, running back out of Sal Point, back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons. I'll say it right now, in my opinion, the best running back to ever come out of Arizona, and he hasn't played his senior year yet. I think he's just that talented. And when you watch him, it's one of those things where he'll be, you know, separating himself from the defense like this, and it looks like he's going half speed. So he's making his commitment at the end of the week on Friday to also his Sal Point teammate, Bruno Fina, offensive lineman, a guy that before August 6th had one Power 5 offer, and it was Abilene Christian. And then since then had the likes of UCLA, USC, Arizona, Arizona State, Washington State, Vanderbilt, Yale, those types of programs offering him, and up to about a dozen offers, maybe more. So a kind of a crazy recruitment for him, that it was pretty slow at first and then a very quick turn on that. He's making his commitment later today. So that's going to be interesting. His final three are UCLA, Yale, and Boston College. And then yesterday, Jalen Jeffers, the offensive tackle for Saguaro. He has played left tackle, has played right tackle. I think in this given lineup, he'll be the right tackle for this year's Sabercat team, but just a massive human being and a guy that was pursued by a lot of different, you know, top flight programs that offers, LSU, Michigan, ASU, Oregon, you know, those types of programs. He goes with the Oregon Ducks. And he told me that it was really down to like Oregon and ASU, but it was the difference was just the amount of effort and energy that the Oregon coaching staff brought. So it's kind of a crazy class when you look at this 2020 class with the offensive linemen. It's a really deep class. If we just go through the list, Tosh Baker committed to Notre Dame. He had 25 plus offers. Another guy that kind of had a quiet recruitment to start, but then all of a sudden blew up. Noah Nelson, longtime starter at Williams Field, another big-bodied guy, committed to Oklahoma. Jalen Jeffers now at Oregon. Cade Bennett, Oklahoma State guard. You know, Ty Kaysen is another guy that is certainly getting looks and things like that. Andrew Milik from Brophy, one of Jason Jewell's guys he told me to watch a couple years ago, and he has certainly blown up. He's committed to USC. So a very strong, strong group of offensive linemen, and Fino will be another one off the board by the end of the day. So it'll be interesting to see kind of that next group. Dylan McGinnis, another guy, I missed him on my list. A guy out of Hamilton committed to Washington State. So a lot of people movers, as I like to call them, that are going to big time programs within the Pac-12. You look at Ben Bray, Frank Thompson, both going to ASU. And then there's one on the board, I think, that's still I could see him kind of blowing up as we progress. Cooper Darling, another guy, Oregon State. See, this is how strong they are. I keep going back to the list and being like, oh, I forgot this guy, I forgot this guy, I forgot this guy. Andrew Roomery and Andrew Garcia are two guys that I think are some of the best available still there. Andrew Roomery has offers from Arizona, Iowa State, you know, those types of programs. About a half dozen offers. San Diego State. A lot of Mountain West, and I saw him this spring. He has really transformed his body. I know that he's high on U of A, so he could be another Pac-12 guy, and I think that he is kind of just scratching the surface on his best football. Andrew Garcia, another guy along that Williams Field offensive line. You have Noah Nelson, Cooper Darling, and Garcia on the other side. Kind of the Nelson and Garcia are bookending that offensive line at the tackle position. He's a guy I think, you know, after a couple years, I think could really become a really good college player, you know, not as polished as potentially Noah Nelson or anything like that. But a guy that certainly has the size, has the length, and is being coached by one of the best offensive line minds in Steve Campbell and that Williams Field coaching staff. So those are a couple guys I think really could, you know, make jumps throughout the season as more and more schools start to look at them and kind of where they're at. You know, on the other side of things, you look at kind of where the rest of the group is. Jason Harris, a guy, defensive end, Higley. Jalen Harris is his older brother at U of A. They were at Desert Ridge together Jason's freshman year, but he has since moved on to Higley. Put out a top six: Arizona, ASU, Colorado, Oregon, Texas A&M, and UCLA. When we last spoke, Texas A&M was getting an official visit. He has visited Arizona, Colorado, has been up to Oregon, been to UCLA, you know, has been on campus with ASU. So a group that obviously very Pac-12 heavy. But I think Arizona, you look at, there's a lot of family connection there, and I know he's very comfortable there. Texas A&M is another one that he is really, really high on, as well as Oregon. Colorado impressed him. But, let's just say, hypothetically, Arizona does get Jason Harris, Andrew Rumery, all of a sudden that, so that's Will Plummer, quarterback at Gilbert, Dylan Miller, the wide receiver over at Centennial, who has been likened a lot to Sean Poindexter, former Centennial wide receiver that turned to the U of A and is now with the San Francisco 49ers. All of a sudden, I think that's a really underrated and kind of sneaky good class, in-state class for Arizona. You get a top 10 guy in Jason Harris, Andrew Rumery, who I think, as I said, kind of it's just scratched the surface with him on kind of where he's at in his development. Will Plummer is solid as can be as a quarterback. And then Dylan Miller, a big bodied guy who what has been the target for Centennial when they are able to kind of air it out a little bit, which is more than I think what people think. Obviously, you think of Centennial in that ground game, but they use the ground game so effectively that it really opens up the passing. And I think Dylan is the one of the main beneficiaries of that, but it's super talented player. And with that, I think, you know, you look at that group, that's a really strong, I think, in-state group on kind of where they're at and everything like that. So with that, when we look at – I'm going to shift gears real quick back to the trade deadline because I just saw a tweet come through from John Morosi. So from a source – the Astros are more comfortable with a Zach Wheeler acquisition cost among the possible rotation trade options. Houston's farm system has thinned out a bit, constraining the team's ability to land a Bumgardner or a Robbie Ray without giving up Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker, one of the main pieces of that farm system. And obviously, Mike Hazen's asking for a lot for one of his top pitchers. Again, we've talked about this before, maybe pairing a few of those guys together with a bullpen member and Archie Bradley and Andrew Chafin. But that was just something Diamondbacks related I saw come through that was interesting. So coming up, we are going to play that interview with Jalen Jeffers, a Saguaro offensive tackle, a really interesting, you know, backstory for him because he's a guy, obviously a huge physical specimen and a guy that's been along that offensive line for a long time. But we talked about how rugby has helped him, you know, kind of work on leverage as well as wrestling to kind of get where he is, how Saguaro has set him up to play at the Pac-12. And this Oregon coaching staff, the energy just seems off the charts with them. So he describes what it's like going on a visit and just having people scream the entire time. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussman Show. It is a busy commitment week for a couple top offensive linemen here in the state of Arizona, and we're going to kick things off with Saguaro offensive tackle Jalen Jeffers. He joins us in studio. Jalen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get right to it. Where are you going to be spending the next couple of years playing college football?
The next 4 years, I'm committed to the University of Oregon.
Congratulations. Why the Oregon Ducks?
I've always said I was going to go to the place that wanted me the most, and they by far put in the most effort into recruiting me and my family and the people who care about me. So it was kind of a obvious decision when I looked at it from that standpoint. And I just feel like they're great, doing some amazing things with their program.
I've talked to quite a few Oregon recruits in the state, and they all say the same thing. When you go up there, there's a whole bunch of energy. And there's so much energy around that coaching staff and that entire program. What's it like going up there? And can you just kind of dig in a little bit deeper about what that energy brings when you're up there?
It's crazy. Like everything, and the biggest part about it is it never dies down. Like you go there and everybody, like you get off the elevator, everybody's ecstatic, everybody's screaming. Like, and then you think, okay, like that was cool. Like, but it never dies down, especially with their strength coach, Coach Feld. He like. I've never talked to him where he was like just talking. He screams everything he says. It's ah, and even like even through text. Like, I just love how their offensive line coach, Coach Mirabal, I'll wake up at 6 in the morning and I'll have 6 texts from him, and it'll be one at like 1:55 watching film on so-and-so, and another one at 4, oh, I'm going on a 6-mile run right now. Like, I love that energy. Like, he's getting up and he's moving. He's never content.
With these Oregon coaches, what was their feedback about your game? What did they like? What did they want to see a little bit more out of, as you develop and get to the next level?
They liked how I moved, especially for an offensive lineman. They wanted a more lean, athletic offensive lineman to play at the tackle position.
Now, you came up, obviously, playing football. You also played rugby. And you played rugby at a high level. What did rugby do for you on the football field?
It's crazy. Like, it definitely made me more tough. And there's so much, like, athleticism involved in rugby. Like, you don't even think about it. But it helps with, like, leverage and, you know, just how to move your body, like, distribute your body weight. Same thing with wrestling. Like, I was a big wrestler, and I think that was a big part of that is learning how to move my body and distribute my body weight. And that definitely helped me with blocking.
At what point did you know it was Oregon?
I don't know. It kind of just hit me. Like, it was like, you know what? Like, my top two were probably ASU and Oregon. And then I just started thinking about how much effort Oregon puts into not only recruiting me, but my family and my coaches. And I know that they don't have to do that. They're not obligated to do that. So for them to do that, it was huge to me. Like, I started to realize that it's going to make everybody more comfortable. And that's what, like, I talked to my mom about it, and she's like, you know, I just feel like Oregon's very open, and I could always reach out to their coaches. And, like, it was just huge to me, especially for them to reach out to my line coach, Coach Martinez, and my head coach, Coach Mons. Like, they didn't have to do that, and they did, so.
Why did you want to make this commitment right now?
I wanted to get it done before the season, for sure. Just to, you know, go into the season with a clear mind and focus on what really counts. And I decided, like, what, there's no better time to do it than my birthday. So
in terms of Saguaro, how did they get you ready to play at the next level?
I feel like all the coaches there are next level coaches, and we have an amazing strength program with Coach Caldwell, and he really gets after us. And, you know, the coaches hold everybody accountable, but they want the players to hold everybody accountable as well. And that's one of the biggest things that Coach Mons preaches. And it's like, you know, good teams are good because, you know, the coaches hold the players accountable, but great teams are great because the players hold the players accountable. And that's one of the biggest things that we're doing this year, and the captains are really stepping up and getting after people. And I'm excited because it's, you know, you can see everybody coming together.
Where are you looking to get better as a senior?
To lead by example, you know. I feel like you could be a big vocal leader, but if someone really sees you do it, then that means something to you. Like, because that was the biggest thing to me my freshman year, growing up behind Jax Awaykazer and Sean Sewards. Like, you watch their film, and they were just nasty. They were just tossing people around, and I was like, okay, I want to be like that. You could talk about it, but, like, when you see it happen, like, it just gives you the chills. And it's like, you know, those are two people I always wanted to be like. And Corey Stevens and Ruben Pember, they were all great great mentors and people. And I look back on it, and these past 4 years have probably been the best 4 years of my life. Like, and it's crazy how quick they all went, and it's just crazy.
All right, Jalen Jeffers, birthday boy, now Oregon commit. Jalen, thanks so much for coming in, and congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Like, more and more guys are wearing visors. Like, you are protected. Yeah. So, yeah, unless you're going to go face mask, like, mm-hmm. But still, your finger gets caught. That's a low percentage.
It is.
For you. So, Devin, appreciate you jumping in, talking Cardinals. Coming up next, he's going to be talking racing. What are you? I don't even know what you're talking about. What are you?
Going to kind of whip around the state a little bit. The news that the Rattlers are going to be at Gila River Arena. I'll talk a little bit Mercury because they set their second WNBA record of the season last night. So that's kind of different that I don't think a lot of people are going to notice outright. But then also in NASCAR, tomorrow is, in my opinion, one of the biggest events of the year in racing, but it's not. I'm talking about how it can be. It's the Truck Series on dirt. Okay. At one of the most famous racetracks in the nation.
All right.
So it could be a little bit bigger. It's not. Let's figure out why.
He's going to break that down coming up next.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I, in fact, am also not Brad Sesmat. Devin Henry here, filling in for Brad and slipping in for Jordan. Quick D-backs update. They're playing the Yankees right now. Down 2-0. End of the second inning. I like to bring that up because it's always a nice little treat when the D-backs get to play the Yankees. 3-0 so far this year against the Yanks. Down by two right now. But always a fun treat. Not someone that you get to see play the D-backs very often. Very reminiscent of that 2001 World Series championship game, I think. But no, that's always just fun to talk about every now and again. I do want to bring up, though, the Phoenix Mercury making a WNBA record. This, in fact, today was Leilani Mitchell, who was 8 of 12 from beyond the arc. That's a WNBA single-game record for three-pointers. Besides that, Brittany Griner scored 30. DeWanna Bonner had another 25 in there. So there's 55 points right there. They still would end up losing, but due to a three-game win streak before that, they're back over 500. They're still in the playoff hunt right now for the WNBA after this All-Star break. Brittany Griner also was making records earlier this year in blocks. So the Phoenix Mercury broken a couple records now here in 2019. And then also news today, the Arizona Rattlers will be playing 2020 and 2021 at Gila River Arena in Westgate in Glendale, Arizona. So year-round football for Glendales, Glendalers, Glendale natives. No, you don't have to be a native of Glendale either, though. So year-round football over in Glendale, that'll be interesting. Of course, the Rattlers just lost the championship game, unfortunately. Trying to build back up what that dynasty was a few years ago in the Arena Football League, now in the Indoor Football League, losing to a team that has double-digit championships in total. Plenty more going on. You can go check out the site at sports360az.com. You got ASU basketball landing Marcus Bagley commitment. We got plenty more on the Arizona Cardinals. Grand Canyon University athletic director resigned. We have stuff on there, and also all of Jordan's wild, massive recruiting news that he carries everywhere. Do you want to talk a little bit about racing? I did put up an update for some of the National Series guys racing right now. CJ Leary is based out of Indiana, but right now he is driving the Reinbold Underwood 19AZ car and currently is leading the points in the biggest non-wing sprint car series in the world right now, the USAC National Sprint Car Series. He won Indiana Sprint Week, essentially the most coveted week in all of motorsports, and he went out, won that in this first-year Arizona startup team. This is like the Las Vegas Golden Knights going out and trying to win a championship in their first year of existence. Right now, CJ Leary with this no-name, out-of-the-blue Arizona team. Now, CJ's not a no-name, and this team isn't small, but it's a first-year effort that shouldn't be where they are right now. And coming into the final months, they have the championship points lead. The season ends here in Arizona, Arizona Speedway in Santan Valley, so that will be really interesting come the end of the year. Also talking about Alex Bowman in this piece that I have, up on the site, winning the first ever NASCAR race in the Cup Series by an Arizonan. A lot of fun there. And also talking about Jagger Jones, the K&M West Series title combatant, and his current efforts to win the NASCAR K&M Pro Series Championship out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Currently goes to Notre Dame Prep. And then also Michael McDowell heading to one of his best tracks of the year this weekend, Watkins Glen International. Plenty of stuff going on in racing. But one thing that I want to talk about is this weekend is the biggest race of the year, in my opinion, or what could be the biggest race of the year, and that is the Eldora Dirt Derby for the Gander Outdoors Truck Series. Not the biggest, you know, series in the world. This is the double A of NASCAR, if you will. Maybe even single A. Nah, I'd say double A. It's the double A of NASCAR. But what happens here that doesn't happen in the MLB or in the D-League, or what is that called now, the G-League for the NBA, is that the top-tier guys can come down and race in this series. So this allows guys like Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Jimmy Johnson to go down and race in these other series. And for the Dirt Derby, when it first came up at Eldora, this came from an event called the Prelude to the Dream, where it took NASCAR drivers and it put them on dirt against other dirt guys and drag racers and stuff like that. This giant exhibition race that was really more of just a good time for these NASCAR drivers, something different, something new, and it actually got some NASCAR drivers into what is now dirt racing across the nation. They retired from NASCAR and went into dirt racing years afterwards. So no one really too interesting in this year's entry list when it comes to at least crazy dirt guys. I don't think Kyle Larson is in it this year. You know, it's going to be nothing that crazy. But here's where I go, hold on. This can be the biggest racing event of the year. You're taking NASCAR onto dirt. Who is really good on dirt? We just talked about CJ Leary, but who else in the USAC series? Oh, well, there's Brady Bacon, Tyler Courtney, and this is a midweek race. This is a Thursday race traditionally earlier in the year, but this year, its third or fourth year in existence, is going to be on a Thursday night. So there's no other racing going on Thursday night. Why not go out and get World of Outlaws multi-time champion Donnie Schatz? Why not go get the World of Outlaws current points leader Brad Sweet? Why not go out and get your USAC guys, Brady Bacon, CJ Leary, Tyler Courtney? Why not go and get some midget drivers like Logan Seavey and Chad Boat and put them into this race? If I am NASCAR, I'm making sure there are tailor-made race cars ready for these dirt guys. And then I go up to the next series and say, hey, Cup guys who like to race dirt, Kyle Larson, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Christopher Bell, Tyler Reddick, the Dillon brothers. We're going to have these cars ready for you to go out and race. What this race can be in the future is a legitimate spectacle of racing. A spectacle of multiple disciplined drivers now racing a vehicle that's not designed to race on dirt. And have at it, boys. Go have some fun. Just a little rant. I would like to see something like that going on in NASCAR in the future, where this Eldora Dirt Derby turns into the biggest race of the year, not just in the truck series, not just in NASCAR, but in motorsports in general. Kind of like how the Chili Bowl Nationals is. Maybe not to that fortitude, though, getting drivers from around the world, but just something fun that I think would be interesting to watch in the future. I did name off a boatload of Arizona names in hopes that maybe one day we will see an Arizona in that race and go out and try to win some races. Brad is back tomorrow, guys. We're glad to have you here on the Brad Sesmatch Show. As I mentioned, go to sports360az.com. We have plenty of great content up, not just in pro sports, but college and high school. We have Jordan going over the wild world of recruiting as we are short of a month away from the beginning of the high school football season. What is that? Friday, August 23rd is the first game of the year. So, yeah, Friday the 23rd. First high school football games back in action. Jordan's got your hookup, guys, for everything going on for recruits. Also, we got plenty of ASU football and basketball news. We have plenty of GCU news with the athletic director resigning, talking to some U of A. Brad's back tomorrow, and he will surely touch on plenty of those topics as well. And if the D-backs do anything this trade deadline, we still got MLB Network up. Still nothing quite going on. I'm Devin Henry. Jordan Hamm was on earlier. Thank you for watching. Kenny Wilkerson behind the glass. We'll see you here same time, same place tomorrow here on Sports 360 AZ.